Welcome to Life Lab with David Ponder and Zach Schaefer. We are the podcast of Experience Experiments.
We give you those experiments via change challenges at the end of each episode.
We created this podcast because we wanted to talk about important topics that can help us all live meaningful lives.
You might agree with what we have to say, or you might disagree. But the point there is that you get something new to think about.
There's no edits and no gimmicks. Our entire point is to help you take action and live a better life.
You only get one life to live, so you may as well make the most of it. Hello, and welcome to Life Lab. Today we are talking about a topic that I'm excited about. You know, the past few, although they've turned out to be really good by the time we got through them, they didn't stoke passion and excitement.
From the beginning.
Right when I heard, that's what we're talking about today. But this one
did.
This one's the opposite. As a matter of fact, I'll say there are a few highlight episodes that I can think of that have been my favorite. Like happiness, like justice and revenge, just some things because they're real. They stoke my emotions.
Nice.
And this one stokes my emotions really, really high.
Yeah, this one cuts through probably every single one we've done, or if not every single, the vast majority. We bring this theme in because it's so important to us. But I guess if we follow our pattern, it inversely correlates. When we have a topic that we're underwhelmed with, it performs well. So now we're really passionate about this, so hopefully it's not underwhelming performance.
We'll see how it we'll see how it goes today when we talk about our family and friends.
Family and friends.
Yeah, so I would say...
Nice intro. I like that.
Oh, thanks. You know, the idea that I had when I was talking about the intro was something that when we were doing our brief little research, I came across something that said, you know, you think about things that people rank as the most important things in, for life or for survival, sort of like the Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And of course, it said people always list the most important things when it comes to needs as food, water, and shelter.
Physiological.
On the flip side, it said all these studies show that a lack of quality relationships is the number one factor when it comes to suicide.
Well, yeah, I can tell you that firsthand from answering suicide hotlines. These folks don't have anyone in their life to listen to them.
And so it occurred to me how important relationships are. And it's a need. It is a human need up on par with the things that I just mentioned.
It's more than that. So a guy named Matthew Lieberman, Harvard trained, I think sort of neurobiologist perhaps, wrote a pretty famous book called Social, maybe 10 years ago now. And the main point I took from it was that while Maslow's hierarchy of needs is extremely useful and very explanatory, it's wrong for humans anyway, because a baby cannot give itself the physiological needs it needs to stay alive. It is 100% dependent on the other members of the species. So the floor, the most important need for our species to even be in existence still, has to be social connection and relationship. Because if you don't have somebody willing to take the time out of their life to keep this other organism alive, it's dead.
Immediately. That's yes. Amazing. I've talked about that in the past. You know, like a horse comes out, it's got to stand. It's got to be ready to run.
Right.
If it doesn't.
Or prey. Yeah. It's literally just got to come out and fly or run.
And there are animals that will abandon their baby if it's not. Because that's the way that their herd works, you know, because they're hunted. It will keep the herd back and then others will die. But not humans. Humans, we've evolved exactly like you said.
Well, it's not me. It's Matthew Lieberman.
Well,
but I love it. Such a strong point. And then you can see why people who carry baggage with them into adulthood, emotional or physical baggage from having a childhood filled with lackluster love or nobody, basically people just barely keeping them alive and having no love and true social support around, no trust and intimacy with people. And that messes you up. Like it takes away the base layer to some degree in the hierarchy of needs, the social need.
Yeah, it's probably one of the things that I think about when I think about orphans or people who grew up with extreme poverty and no adult mentors or you know, guidance. I think about the way that our society is built today versus the way that it was when we were in our tribes, in our tribal stuff. And you hear about other societies where things like, you know, one of the things as we read about Stoicism that has struck me that I've been like, wow, is that adoption was common. But in so much that adoption was common, it was almost like a mentorship love type of adoption.
Mentorship, apprenticeship, skills sharing, wisdom sharing.
Right. And so, and I always recall the stories about other cultures like the Spartans who at birth would take the baby away and raise the child as a community. So parents, I mean, I don't know what I think about this, but this is crazy. It's a crazy thought. Like parents sometimes weren't sure if which child was theirs, but all adults then loved all the children in that they were raising and took turns.
Like the village model.
Yeah. Yeah. Took turns raising them. And so I'm like, man, that's crazy. It's a totally different way of doing things, but it's not devoid of love. It's not devoid of support. It's different. So I think we probably would have a negative reaction when we think about it versus when I think about, oh man, how tough and how rough it would be to be born nowadays. And by nowadays, I mean in the past, I don't know, several decades into an institutionalized existence, you know, where you're an orphan or you're raised by, and you're in the foster care system and how, like you said, right, how tough that would be.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like to do the broad general strokes because I'm sure there's plenty of people in those systems that do care. That's why they're part of it. And people that foster kids temporarily, you know, they're doing it, I'm assuming, because they think it's the right thing to do and they're trying to share love. Now, obviously, there's terrible things that occur. And thanks to our wonderful journalists today, that's what gets the headlines. But for me, friends and family and your person's need for it isn't just built into you through your environment and setting. It's also genetically hardwired into you. So like even me and you, where friends and family are very important, we use those things differently. I have a different way need for those. Now, did that come from my parents' divorce or did like, I don't know, or if it was just genetic, but I know and understand how I need friends in my life. And it serves a very important purpose to keep me energized.
I came across something that talked about that. It talked about genetic tendencies to reach out to others for support or not, which is funny to me because when I reflect on myself, I'm like, man, I'm kind of an enigma. I value these relationships so much. And yet you are so proactive when it comes to reaching out to people.
But I'm the extreme. Like I do that because I know I need it. So I've built a self-coaching mechanism into myself to nurture the relationships that I know are beneficial, not just to me, but obviously to the other person or they wouldn't stay in it with me. But I get emotional satisfaction out of even the reach out for me is fun.
Well, that's funny because I do too, and yet I don't do it, which yeah. I've been noting, you know, we do our daily journal. And one of the things I've been noting is like, connect with people, take the time, do it. I don't know why, but it's not, you know, with you, you get positive emotion from the thought of connecting with
just
people.
Just sending the funny text.
Yes.
It makes me feel, now, yes. Is that super selfish? No, because I know there's going to be hopefully some joy on the other end of that.
Right.
Text transmission.
Well, and now we're getting about ourselves, but I don't understand for myself, I'll say this, as I've been journaling about this lately, why I get such positive emotion after the fact, but thinking about it and anticipating it, I don't, or else I would be taking
the
action.
Anticipation, interesting, because yeah. I used to, with alcoholics or addicts, part, you know, as a recovering alcoholic, part of the thing you have is the anticipation of the event is almost, well, shit, towards the end, it's more fun than the actual drinking because you're at a low spot at that point. But I get the same thing when I'm thinking of just a fun way to interact or reach out to somebody. I'm like, I'm smiling right now. I literally am by myself, but it's like I'm connecting with the person already. There was a really famous study of a Man Gulch fire. It's a big canyon out west, and a bunch of fire jumpers died years ago. And what they found was the few that stayed alive, they basically envisioned of what we'd call more of a virtual environment, that the people were still alive, that they still had their roles, and they just acted like they were still on that team. And they're like, that's the only thing that saved my life, was the fake social relationships, even though they just saw all their people burn up. And that burned in my brain, and I remembered that. So then when I'm down during the day, I almost like have a conversation with somebody, even if they're not there.
Yeah.
It's weird.
No, I get it, but I think it's interesting to be introspective, and as people are listening to this, probably think about this, how does this apply to you, about the fact that I know I need it, and I know I enjoy it and everything, but the anticipation of it for me is not like it is for you, and that's what drives our actions.
Here's why. I'm gonna tell you why it's different, and you're going to tell me why it's wrong. Time, just like everything else, it comes down to time. My schedule is much more flexible than yours. You literally have to, you're paid by your time. You're billing by the hour. Don't shake your head. You know that's a fact.
No.
And you are having to solve problems for these clients where you're in a software system where they're monitoring. He's in, he's logged in, he's clocked in, he's on the screen.
No,
I don't have any of that.
I'm
so
not
I can
arguing with
do
you.
Do things
that.
Differently.
That's true. But I still think it's been true since we were kids.
Gotcha.
That there has been something different where you take action, you take social action, and it's a natural drive for you.
Well, I don't know if it was then. Maybe it was. It was definitely a coping mechanism for the divorce back then, too. A way to repress. Let's just have fun. Let's connect. Let's ride bikes. Let's talk about girls. Let's do whatever to not think about the divorce. I'm sure that was part of it.
I mean, I'm sure it just goes back to introvert, extrovert.
Yeah.
As I've gotten older, I've become much more extroverted, much more comfortable being more extroverted. But for some reason, I've naturally been more introverted. But anyway, that's what the way that I feel about myself. And I think that's a good segue for something that I'd like to bring up, unless you have something
I got a bunch. You take it where you want.
Which is the ranking of the importance of types of relationships in your life. And so there have been some, I guess, psychological studies that have talked about how, especially later in life, friends become more important when it comes to satisfaction and happiness when they're doing surveys of people. So as people get older, they start to rate friends and friendship relationships as being more satisfying to them than family relationships or even romantic partner relationships.
I'd be curious at what age the surveys were targeting, because that could be varied. You're in your 30s to early 40s. Typically, you are heads down trying to raise your family if you've had kids and are not a bum. You know, I could see that into the 50s. Now kids are a little older, a little more self-sufficient. You got some more disposable income. So now you can kind of act like a kid again, a little less responsibility, but now you can have some toys and you can go on trips with friends. I get that. That makes sense. But 30s, 40s, you tend to see most people, the friendships fizzle a bit because you're taking care of your families.
And I would even say that that's probably like the sweet spot. Yeah. So two things I think are variables. One, the age. The other one, are we talking about parents to kids or are we talking about kids to parents? Because I think throughout life it's going to change. So I think as a young child, obviously you're going to say my family's the most important thing.
Right.
You're dependent on them. And then you hit adolescence and then friends become way more important.
Yep.
And then I think that adolescence flows through college and young adulthood where you don't have children of your own, right? And so now you're in that have fun with your friends, becoming an adult type time where you're spending as much time as you can with your friends. When I think about college, I think about that's probably the time that I spent the least amount of time with my family.
Yeah, definitely for me.
And then you have kids of your own and it boom, flips
right
back. Now it's all about family for that period of time where your kids are young, and I'm anticipating because
now there's a huge bias that we're talking about, and I think we just need to throw out the asterisk, the disclaimer, and then just move on. We grew up, and even though my parents were divorced, we were all still around each other and together. We grew up in very healthy, loving, supportive families. that's our understanding of family.
Right.
I have many students when I was teaching, you bring up family, you see the face tighten up because they family to them is a nasty word, a terrible, dysfunctional, hurtful, vengeful, hateful word for them. And so we have to make that very clear that we're talking about family for us. It's so positive.
That's true.
Many people, it's the exact opposite. But what I would say, and then we can move forward again, you can build your own family.
Yeah.
You didn't get to choose those folks. Fine. Then drop them if they're deadbeats and build your own based on the values and virtues that you want to establish and try to drop off as much of that pain as you can.
Yeah. So we had a positive family experience when we were young. And we are building a positive family experience.
We hope.
We're trying to.
We'll see.
Right. As we speak. Right. Where in the beginning, if you are born into a poor family experience, you still have an opportunity when you're old to build a positive
absolutely. You can use that as your obstacle, that you use that as the path forward.
Right.
But it's not easy, clearly.
So what I will say is this. I would assume that the thing that I'm talking about, people rating their friends as being more important at different points in their life, like we're talking about, I would think that would probably hold true, even in those situations. Because you're thinking about it in two different ways, right? You're thinking it from the role you're playing. I am the parent now, so to me, like, I'm trying – will there be a time where it's like, oh, I really like being around my friends more than my kids? You know what I mean? Like, from a parent role, that seems different to me than where I naturally think about, well, as a child, it makes total sense to me that there's a time where I will want to be around my friends more than I want to be around my parents. It's almost just a natural part of growing up.
Here, I'll share something fucked up with you. You already know it, but for our three people that listen to our podcast consecutively, they can learn from this. Towards the end of my drinking, you know, that last year and a half, so 2016 to 2017, my kids were an inconvenience to me, 100%. They got in the way of my lifestyle. I have to fucking take them to school. I have to pick them up from school. I could be getting a beer. I could be doing whatever I want. Now, 5 nights during the week, I'd be out 4 of those nights. Not late, but I'd get home at 8, already drunk, drink more when I get home. They were an afterthought. They were an inconvenience is the most honest way to say it. Get sober, work the program, do my things. If I'm not home around them from 3 o'clock till they go to bed, I'm like, I have to go to this stupid event tonight. I'm not around the family. It's so weird how quickly it changed. And I'm so happy it did. And it's not like I made this active choice. It's just I removed the problem I had in my life was removed, and it just, I was able to focus. So people that struggle with any consumption issue or addiction issue, or if it's work is their thing, if you try to right size your life and rebalance and shift the focus where it should be, man, it changes things so much for the positive. And it's so hard to do, but you know,
the big idea that I'm getting out of that, which is crazy, I didn't think about it when we were preparing for this, is healthy relationships versus unhealthy relationships.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure there's an entire crowd that was with you when you were doing, when you were hanging out till 8 p.m. or whatever every weeknight drinking, that were feeding that. And those relationships were, quote unquote, stronger because of that activity.
Oh, yeah.
And since you've cut that problem out of your life, those relationships, I'm sure, are withering.
They're there. They actually haven't. Like, I don't think of any close friend, because it's not like I was going out meeting new people. I was hanging out with the people I'd normally hang out with. I just know it's what Nietzsche says, the eternal recurrence of the same. I don't need to go out and watch a baseball game that I don't care at all about, have beers with people or whatever it is, tell the same jokes or hear stories, come back. By not being a part of that, when I see them the next day, I've missed nothing. I've missed nothing. The relationship's already built. And if any relationships did wither, those weren't substantive relationships for me or them, and that's okay. Friends for a reason, friends for a season.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes total sense. And I will say, you are an anomaly, I believe, when it comes to relationship building and maintenance, in that you reach out and have relationships with people that are multifaceted, where a lot of people have one-dimensional relationships with people. Work friends
right,
is a
yeah,
perfect
a compartmentalized
example.
Lane of friends.
Yeah, exactly. And I wanted to talk about that later, so we can come back to that later. But so I would suspect, you know, it's like one of the things that I – it's one of the bigger things that I think about when I'm talking about raising my kids is how big of an impact the relationships that they build, the friends that they choose are so formative. And they're really not – they're beyond my control.
That's the – that dude, that's so huge. I didn't think about talking about this until you said it. So thank you. Parents, parents that care and want to be involved without being too involved in solving all your kids' problems, we think we're trying to set them up for success, right? Like help them to make good decisions. You talk to your kids every night about the key values and you're trying – and they pick up on that even if they don't – you don't think they do in the moment. The peers that they make in life are way more influential on what their decisions will be. And I already know this because I know the research, so I'm trying to build it into them. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Like, we just got to do our best and let go. Be willing to let go and say, hopefully I've created a foundation of effective decision-making where you can be self-reliant and make good choices. And you're going to make many bad ones, and I'm going to be here to love you and support you and offer a perspective if you need it, but it's your life.
I mean, that's the – obviously, that's the enlightened way to think about it.
It's hard as shit.
It's so hard to accept that, you know? As a parent, you give and you give and you give and you guide.
Well, a perfect example, like here's our friendship. We can provide difficult feedback. So Dave just gave me some great – what he considered difficult feedback to give. Our kids were playing on his kids' monkey bars, and my son, he just wasn't able to get across, and he didn't want to continue trying. And when I was like, oh, no, you got to keep going. We'll get to the other end. I'll help you. He's like, no, it's hard. That shit don't fly in the Schaefer tribe. And I'll never change that value. But the way I dealt with it in the moment, I was too sharp. Clearly, Ben was scared. The monkey bars are up kind of high. It just wasn't the right response. Now, what Dave didn't see is we came home and talked about monkey bars the rest of the night. We built a little action plan for how we'll get good and Dad will help him. So I made my wrong right. But in the moment, it wasn't good. You know, but that's friends.
Right.
A lot of friends can't give that kind of honest feedback because he's like, hey, I gotta let you know, man, like how you did that. I didn't like it. It was too harsh. He was scared. That's friendship, folks. And I didn't like hearing it, but he was right. And I knew it. And I thanked him for telling me that.
That's true.
And then I told him how he sucks as a father.
Yeah, you always have to have that part. It's a two-way street. Two-way street, people.
But no, it's important. You want to surround yourself and build, again, the people that listen to this, it could be too late. Unfortunately, when you reach a certain age, people don't want to make new friends. But for younger folks, you want to make friends where you can say that kind of stuff to each other because it's out of love. There's different types of love. You know, and my love to my kids looks and feels different than the way you give love. And that's okay because the base foundation is it's love. We're trying to help them do the right things.
Totally. Totally makes sense. Where do you want to
medicine.
Go? Medicine.
Okay. Friends and family are not the – I understand real medicine and there's therapies and treatments that work. COVID. All the stories – again, thanks, journalists – of all these people having to die alone. Just awful. Awful. People can't get in. They wouldn't let people in. And I get it, to see their people. So what were they doing? Because the human touch and connection is so important, the nurses started filling rubber gloves with warm water to simulate the human hand and set it on people so they could have something, some form of touch while they're dying. Social connections is a form of medicine, and I believe that people die more quickly if they don't nurture relationships throughout their life.
I agree 100%, and you can see it in study when they're down to them and their romantic partner, and their romantic partner dies, and they die soon after, and it's almost unexplainable.
Well, it is and it isn't. The physical death, I'm talking more about the purpose.
Yeah.
The spirit dies, the soul, the purpose, the will to live.
And then naturally you physically die after.
Then the physical comes after. When you lose your why or your purpose and you give up.
I won't even – so I would use the word nourishment.
Good word.
Rather than medicine.
Yes, better word.
I believe that relationships are nourishment. And the, there's great ways to think about it or great examples that illustrate it. One of the things that I think about when I think about relationships being nourishment is the movie Castaway.
Nice.
Tom Hanks ends up on an island by himself. He survived a plane crash, and he's the only one there. And he had, you know, obviously you got to find food and you got to make shelter. But what else? He takes a volleyball and he makes it a person. He treats a volleyball as if it is a living being so that he can have that nourishment, that relationship. And there's a scene in it that I think is especially poignant where he's trying to escape the island on a raft and a storm comes and he gets disconnected with the volleyball. He gets Wilson. Wilson is what he, you know, obviously he names it Wilson because it's a Wilson branded volleyball. And he becomes so distressed. And it's a great piece of acting in that scene to watch a human being distressed about being disconnected from an inanimate object as if it is a loved one, because that's all he's got.
Because he had to make it that. It's the same thing as the Man Gulch guys. That's what was keeping him alive. It's so important. Well, and then you see on the opposite end, folks, that it's why we view... What's the worst punishment they give in prison outside of death?
Solitary
confinement. Even in a prison where you have, you know, hardened folks spending time, the worst thing you can do to a human in who's already in prison for life is then throw them in a cell where they have no connection with anyone. And people, they're terrified of it. They hate it. And there's all kinds of laws trying to get rid of it because it just warps the person. It's almost like you might as well kill them.
Breaks you.
Yeah. So that nourishment is a very real thing. And then we look at people like a Ted Kaczynski, or now there were factors that the government helped make him that way, but people that choose to go live as isolates and, you know, hermits kind of, we don't understand them. We just, they're very odd. They want no connection with others. It's like they're a member of a different species, to be quite honest.
It is.
But man, like that's a power of the Wilson scene, because there was many of them, are powerful.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I was going to go to the social animal part where we talk. You said it's as if those people who are hermits or whatever, they're as it like another species. Because it seems to me part of humanity is the need for that connection, and we've given all kinds of examples of it. You know what? There was another one that I wanted to give besides the Castaway and the Wilson example. The other example that I wanted to highlight was the tendency for people to die after their life partner dies quickly, right? And it just highlights, like, if someone's like, well, connection's important, but it's not that important. Like, no, it's literally life and death.
That person is somebody I don't want to have in my life.
Right. It's literally life and death. And you can see it you can see it. It's statistically proven. But there are people who seem to – I don't know about the whole hermit thing. Like how? Like that's an enigma to me.
Well, it is an enigma. That's the point. They're, you know, they don't want to be studied. They don't want connection. So it's just like leave me be to a full degree.
Right. Because I think of the human animal as part of a greater whole. Like we are part of our communities, we're part of our families, we're part of our, you know, we're like a cog in this greater system, and we're connected. And I've heard that as data analytics gets better, there are more and more ways of illustrating how we have groupthink, group emotion, events that happen that are like global or national events, stoke feelings and actions that are done on a macro. You can see them on a macro where they're impacting the entire community, the entire culture, and it makes itself known in the behavior. And you know, crime rates will go up and all this stuff will happen on a macro. And to me, it's like that's just an illustration of how we are more connected than we realize that we are. And I And it can be seen now in ways that it hadn't been able to be seen in the past just because of the way we're able to track things. And I just think that that's part of the illustration that we are a social animal.
Yeah. No, I think that's good. That's high-level stuff. How do people – I mean, I think we should talk about how people can begin to build friendships. Because, again, most people listen to this. They're not going to go out and make, in my opinion, maybe even one new friend their whole life.
Man.
Think about that.
Yeah.
People in their mid-30s or later, you probably aren't going to make one real friend. Work friends don't count. Somebody that you're forced to interact with to earn your living, to put food on your table that you wouldn't have met by bumping into on your own in life, that don't count.
You know, we talked about before this when we were, I was like, oh yeah, man, there's that book that you recommended that I want to read. It's called Difficult Conversations. Now, I'm sure that is about conflict. That book.
It's about difficult conversations, which is a cousin to conflict.
Oh.
Difficult conversations are just things that people have a difficult time talking about. It doesn't mean that there's a full-on disagreement about things. It could be like, I don't like talking about tennis shoes with grandma because she loves kids.
I don't like walking up to a person that I don't know and striking up a conversation.
There you go. That's a difficult conversation.
A lot of people have that.
And I think many people. Most people.
The bar for what is a difficult conversation is different for people.
Yes, that's the point of the book. There's no one thing. Now, there's certain patterns. People don't like asking for raises or telling their boss they were wrong. And so they give guidelines on how to have effective, difficult conversations across any sphere in your life. But yeah, if that'd be one of my top three books to recommend that every human on the planet should read and have to understand.
So it's not the only way to create a connection, but it is a proactive way of creating a connection. It's probably the most, I don't know, you know this better than me. You're the expert in communication. Talking to someone. Taking the initiative to
You're not
start a conversation.
Build, yeah, like that's the bare minimum
criteria.
You're not going to connect if you don't open the floodgate for the connection.
Well, and I think like introverts, they rely on, well, a social situation will arise where I'm forced to communicate, and those are how my friendships will come about. School is the first one that happens in many kids' lives. And they build their friends off of school, and then work when you're an adult, or you know, people go join groups, or like they've put themselves in situations purposely thinking that that's what's going to cause a relationship to occur.
Yeah, but we've been focusing mostly, it seems to be, though, on old-fashioned communication and connection, face-to-face. Introverts, they are social online. 100%. They are very social. They are on the different social media channels, and you would be like, wow, this person's super social. They're constantly connecting and talking. And they would – many of them would say, I would never want to strike up a single conversation with these people in real life.
That's so interesting.
Because different communication channels, you know, in the metaverse with our online lives, you can be very social through a mediated form of communication like Facebook or whatever.
Gaming.
TikTok, gaming. Gaming is very social. Netflix, Prime. Now they all have little buttons you click, watch party. You know me, I like to watch a movie and kind of talk through it. Well, they found out there's enough people like that. So you can just join a random group watching the same thing so you can all just chatter back and forth. It's our need for connection. And through these tools, we now have new forms for introverts to feel comfortable connecting in a safe environment where they don't have to go do it in person. Very interesting and neat.
Two mind-blowing thoughts. To me, they're mind-blowing. One, whenever I watch something with other people, it's better. So if I'm watching a comedian and it's funny and I'm by myself, I might chuckle
right
to myself. If I'm watching it with other people and having that connection there, it amplifies.
Absolutely. That's a louder laugh.
In the same way, I just heard, and this is something that I think is becoming highlighted because of the fact that the pandemic took it away from us. It's that there is a feeling that you get whenever you experience something as a part of a crowd.
Yeah.
A concert, a large sporting event. Being there in person is... It's irreplaceable.
It's an experience.
It's an experience that you can't replicate without being there in person and experiencing it as part of a crowd. In the same way, I will say, in the same way, but to a lesser degree, and I want to see if you agree with this. When we were a kid, you would consume things separately from other people, but just knowing that the rest of the world was consuming it at the same time as you also was a different feeling. So, for example, whenever there was a new, I don't know, something that everybody, an episode of Friends or Seinfeld, because when we were growing up, everyone that we knew would be watching them. If I watched it at the time that it was coming out and it was the new one and I knew everybody else was watching it at the same time, there was this certain feeling that I got about that that doesn't exist now. Like if I watch on demand something and I feel like I'm the only one watching this thing at this time, there's a feeling that I don't get from that. It's weird.
Yeah, no, I like it. It's the same thing today, in my opinion. When you get together with friends, at least our friends, most people, what are you watching? Like, what you start talking about shows. Why do you talk about that? Well, I guess something to talk about. And it's just connection. You start sharing. Maybe you connect it to your life or something else going on. What do most people not do? Read. I read a lot. I have the time to read. I enjoy reading. It makes me feel good. I learn. I'm all very aware that if I just dove into and started talking about the books I'm reading, I move from possible connection with my very close friends to instantly forming disconnection. Because even if I'm not trying to come off as pedantic and condescending and this and that, it can, because I know none of them read, and then they feel bad about themselves, or they're like, this fucking asshole. So I just choose not, because there's no connective ability there, because I know no one's reading anything.
Yeah. No, that totally makes sense. That totally makes sense. So one of the things that I wanted to talk about is returning to the idea of, as you get older, ranking connection that you have. This study that they talked about said that people, as they got older, old enough to have romantic partners, we'll just say that, ranked the three categories in this order. Number one, friends. Number two, family. And number three, romantic partners. And I thought that was interesting. Romantic partners ended up in the last place when it came to driving happiness.
Yeah, again, I'd want to look at the methodology of the study. Sure. That's very, extremely important.
It was just a survey.
Yeah.
And it was just like,
because I think there's, while an interesting thing, the methodology either means it's a good survey, it's useful, it's generalizable and valid, or it's shit.
Yeah. From what I read, it was a survey of simple one answer survey, which is rank them. And it's what do you get the most happiness? So when you spend time with these groups of people, what do you get the most happy?
Oh, I think that then is a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Family, there's just shit. You're constantly eating a shit sandwich. Because with kids, you're trying to provide good role modeling behaviors and constantly turn everything into a lesson and saying the word no 8 million times. And then you and your spouse are trying to be on the same page and still have an intimate relation. It's hard as hell. So when you get to be with your friends, you can fuck off. You can do whatever you want. Like, of course you're going to be happier there.
Well, that's exactly the conclusion. the one of the things that it then went into was fun versus work. Yeah. And it said, you know, in their results, people rated something like 65% of their experiences with friends involve socializing and fun versus only 28% of the time shared with partners, which I think that's high. 28% of the time that I spend with Lauren is socializing and fun? No way.
No way.
Not at this point in life.
No, it's just not.
Maybe like 5%, right. 10%.
And then if people like, because you do lessons for different things for your kids. We do too in the house. It ain't like when we're sitting down with Claudia to do her piano, because we're in the room with her. We're not there with giant smiles on our, like, it's a huge time suck out of our life. It's there's friction there at times, but we get it done. Sometimes it's more fun than others, but it's more work than fun. But we understand the outcome we're trying to create, a habit of it over time, you know? And so that, to me, yes, that survey makes sense. But I want to tie it back to something that we love. The AARP study of hospice care workers that say one of the number one things that the dying talk about. I'd like to see this study replicated, by the way, to see what, because that was probably 15 or 20 years old now at this point. My friends, I should have kept closer friendships throughout my life. I want to bump that into a counter perspective that comes from a Chris Rock joke that I find personally a ton of truth in. not just for how I think about things, but then also based on my mother-in-law's experience of being a nurse at a retirement community. He's like, yeah, everybody talks about how important their friends are, and, you know, you got to keep your friendships your whole life. He's like, yeah, how many friends when you're dying of cancer are going to be the person coming and taking care of you in the hospital every day and spending time with you? Yeah, no one, none. It's only family members. And anyone that's saying different is fucking lying. And then I brought that up to Marilyn. She's like, oh, yeah, no, it's only family members come see people. And that is so true. And we I don't know if we need to – what it is, the dying, like, oh, I needed more friendships. But when we're actually dying, it ain't the friends coming. You're not going to be coming to take care of me or vice versa. It's going to be your family.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know. I just think those two perspectives, I think one's more like romanticized and the other one's reality.
Oh, yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, obviously, with the romanticized one, I think about Tuesdays with Maury,
mm-hmm.
which would be the
exactly.
ideal situation. He right. knows he's dying, and so he's able to...
He's choosing to continue cultivating the nourishing relationship.
Exactly.
By basically putting a responsibility on someone to help take care of me.
That's true.
There's a forced interaction there. True. These people weren't just coming over to do this on their goodwill. He was creating these relationships to create those opportunities.
Yeah, you're right.
Anyway, I just thought those two things are interesting and tie into friends and family. But it goes to show that in the end of life, if you talk to people who are dealing, I'm not talking about a friend coming and visiting you for an hour while you're in the house. I'm talking about changing your fucking diapers and doing the stuff that no one wants to do. That is family doing that
family.
For the most part.
For the most part, yeah. And it goes back to the whole fun versus work thing when we're talking about what kind of happiness do you get from your relationships? You know what I mean?
How fun is it changing your dying spouse's diapers?
Yeah, nobody's right? going to rate that right. as fun, but...
It's necessary.
Oh,
it's
not...
It's a duty.
It's not just... It is.
It's duty.
You're right.
If you want to be a good husband or wife or spouse, that is your duty.
If you want to love yourself.
Shit. If you don't, then don't get married.
I'll even say that. If you want to love yourself. Because there are plenty of people who don't take care of their family.
100%.
And they hate themselves.
Yeah. But they'll never let on to that.
They're either...
They project hate onto others, but they really have self-loathing.
Yeah, they're either psychotic and sociopathic or they hate themselves. Yeah.
Let's go back to a more happy topic.
Okay.
Building relationships. How do people build? I think I'm pretty – you keep saying I'm such an expert in this. Again, whether I cultivated it or I'm natural, I am pretty good at building relationships, and it's important to me. I think I have a pretty good recipe for how you get it done, and it's probably counterintuitive, and it's easier for young people than old people.
The first step is taking action.
But yeah, you got to open up the opportunity. So mm-hmm. be somewhere. Even if it's online, fine, but I'll focus on in person. You got to be open to life. You got to, as Hunter Thompson said, buy the ticket, take the ride.
Okay, so you're talking about the very first step is relationship initialization.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're not talking about maintenance.
No, you're building something
building
that you could then get to maintenance.
A new relationship, yeah.
There's a phrase, there's two sayings that I think about, trust and trouble and the flat tire. Trust and trouble. You don't have a relationship if there's no trust there, period. How do you begin to build trust? Well, that is like the fifth step in the chain. The first is being open to conversations with folks, beginning to interact consistently with someone. Then after that comes collaboration, comes where we can openly disagree, and that's a positive disagreement. We can compromise. We can negotiate. We can accommodate. We can be competitive. Through that whole collaborative process, trust is an outcome that emerges. So when you remove collaboration, you can't collaborate if there's no interaction. Just look at Congress. They don't hang out socially. They talk to each other through very formal communication means. Obviously, there's no trust because there's no opportunity to build it. Getting in trouble together, getting into and out of shit, that is really going to differentiate who your friends are and who's just, an acquaintance. You get in and out of trouble together. You have some loyalty there. That is the glue of relationship. And it doesn't have to be huge trouble. I'm not saying go get arrested. I'm saying the little things we do as humans, maybe you make a bad decision together and you own it together. That is what builds or breaks friendships.
Dude, I love that recipe. That's amazing.
Yeah.
There's so much value in that recipe. You got to do something with that.
I don't know. I did. I built relationships with it.
Well, and so here's what I'll say about that is one of the things I wanted to talk about was real friends versus
Facebook friends.
work friends.
Work friends.
Okay. Or whatever friends. Yeah. And I think that it probably comes to the evolution of that relationship. So you get to interacting, right? You might even collaborate. But it probably ends there, right?
Well, you're forced to collaborate with yeah. work.
And it's stuff you don't want to collaborate on. Right. And so, sure, like maybe I'll gain some work trust with you. But that's it. I'm compartmentalizing that stuff.
Right.
You know, one of the things that I think...
Compliance collaboration.
Well,
I'll collaborate because exactly. I got to be compliant.
Exactly. If we're going to get this done, we got to do it.
Right.
So I have to do it with you. Fine. One of the things that, and this is your wheelhouse totally, but I've noticed it throughout my career, and it's been one of the ways that I rate culture in a work organization. And that is, whenever there is a social event, do people choose to go to it, or do the leaders have to really encourage people and incentivize them even to come? Because I've been at both types of organizations, and I think a lot of it is out of leadership's control and has to do with the life phase that the workers are in.
That's what I was just going to say. The worker's life cycle and the company's life cycle are very important to
yep.
this.
Yep, no doubt about that. But on the flip side, I've experienced both of those that either are naturally bad. Everyone chooses not to be there despite their young and old, they choose not to go to the work events, and vice versa. And so I've always just thought about how that was an interesting thing, because it kind of shows the quality of relationships that are being cultivated in that organization.
100%. Yeah, we could go deep there, but I like that. As a proxy, that's a really nice tool. And there's trust. To me, that's, again, innovative leaders or thinkers. You don't even have to be a leader. When you can always learn. Life lab, right? So you do something, let's do an event together. Nobody shows up. That is a learning opportunity. That is a red flag that says, okay, let's do a root cause analysis. Let's figure out what's going on. Am I causing this? This is probably an expression of ineffective leadership. Like, look in the mirror. But that's not usually what happens. So my first step, trust and trouble. Step two, this is more maintenance. The flat tire. A real friend is the person you're going to call at 2 a.m. to come help you take the flat tire, fix it. A real friend is the person you're going to call at 6 a.m. to take you to the airport so you don't have to pay for an Uber.
Or to take you to the ER when you're sick because nobody right. else is around.
Right. So again, that's the difference between a work friend. If you have the hesitation to be like, no, I don't think they'd do it. That's not a substantive friend. Like, if obviously you don't want to put somebody out, even if they're a close friend, but if you know, yeah, they'll do it. I know they'll do it. That's a real friend. And there's no magic number for how many people you should have. You don't need 100 of those. Having one is great. Just having that one person you can really count on. But that's all about reliability. And I like being the person that a lot of my friends can reach out to. They know I'll be there for them and I'll be committed. And it takes away time from my life, but it builds because it's who I am. I like it. And then I know when I need shit, they'll be there for me.
Man, that's powerful.
But it's the flat tire, man. That's powerful. That's the metaphor I use.
It is. It's the flat tire. It's the moving day.
Moving, great one. Great
it's
one.
The,
moving.
It's the drive to the airport.
Yep, those three things.
Man.
Dunbar's number, for those of you who aren't familiar, by Robin Dunbar, an anthropologist, studying how many relationships can the average human maintain actively to where they have not only some personal knowledge of each person, but they also can have some understanding of how each person might know or interact with those others. And that Dunbar's number is 150. And so a lot of organizations have made organizational design decisions around that. We'll build all our buildings that'll only hold 150 parking spots. As soon as it hits that, we know we're growing, time to build another building. They do all kinds of stuff. Now, there's some criticism, this and that, methodological stuff. That's kind of how I view it. I can have 150 decently close people around me. I can have 100, I'm willing to get up to 150 clients, and then I'm done. That number is an important number to
me. I agree. I heard somebody break that one down into subclasses. And I mean, I'm sure you can get really, really detailed with it. But I agree with it. I like it.
Yeah. To me, it's just a round number that, yeah, you can manage that. And yeah. I see that. So when people are thinking about, well, how many friends? The influencer has 1 million likes on TikTok or whatever. It's like, yeah.
Well, it's funny. Like I look at my social media stuff, and I'm like, I've got 600 connections on LinkedIn. I don't know any of these people.
Oh yeah,
that, or well, LinkedIn, Facebook,
LinkedIn's a
or most of the Facebook is like, oh yeah, I think I remember that person. I'll accept their friend request. You know what
but
I mean?
Again, we view the online virtual reality differently than the younger generations. That metaverse, you know, owning your identity online is going to be very different for our kids and than it was for us.
Absolutely. It's going to become a bigger and bigger part of life.
What else? I mean, when you're 50 or 60 or whatever, what do you want? What do you envision for yourself in terms of friends and family? Like, how do you envision romanticized older Dave with family or friends?
Yeah. So my one of the things I admire about you that is different from me that I know that I won't have, and therefore I think it can't be a desire of mine, is that big of a network. When I think about the Dunbar's number thing, I think that that's probably pretty consistent for people. But I think there's probably wide variances in quality of relationships and what numbers each people can sustain at each quality level.
Yeah, that's a great point. Quality versus quantity.
Yeah, so like my good friends, how many of those can I really maintain? Well, for me, it's small. It's probably around five.
But yeah, I mean, obviously I have a threshold of key relationships in my life.
But I mean, what I would say is, and I think that that's drastically different, right? Like, let's say my number is somewhere around five. I can have five good friends, people who I can call for moving day or the tire situation or whatever. Yours is drastically higher than that. It's probably in the 15, 20, who knows? And so if you think about that just from that perspective, that's like three or four times as much. That's just the way you are, you know?
Yeah, and we don't need to know why, it just is.
Well, so when you ask me what I want, I think about that and I think about knowing myself. And I want, if it's going to be five, if that's my number, then I want those five to be solid.
Deep.
I want them to be real good, you know?
Here's an easy way people can give themselves as a proxy to determine who are my close people. Get on your phone and look at your what's it called? The call list.
Recency. Yeah.
Not recency. The key, like your favorites.
Oh, yeah.
Mine literally goes in order. You can see what my order is. Your order typically is kind of how you rank the close people.
That's awesome.
And you saw where you were.
And that's so funny. I haven't even built the favorites. Oh,
so then it wouldn't work for you.
No,
clearly.
For me, I would look at my recent calls and my texts.
There you go. So you could see who you're interacting with a lot. Yeah. But yeah, no, man, friends and family. So you, instead of answering my question, you really compared yourself to me. So
well,
when you see your old self, what do you see?
I said, I want five or so.
Gotcha. Okay.
Very good relationships. I would like to be a part of some organizations of things that I'm interested in, right? So I'd like to have relationships that are not key, that are not those core five person relationships that specialize in certain areas because we share certain interests.
That's cool. Right? I like that.
So recognizing that those relationships will probably be a little bit more one-dimensional, but we'll be able to go deep on a topic that we connect on.
That's cool.
Because I think those types of relationships are valuable.
Yeah, those are fun relationships.
And then clearly the most important thing is like I've always had good family situations and that's the number one thing to me. I want my kids and I want my immediate family relationship to be good, positive, you know. Kids, brother, parents, siblings, that level, I want that to be solid. And I would say in that order, family, then the five friends, then
whoever.
Yeah. Then key one-dimensional relationships. Yeah.
I like that answer. I have a very specific image in my head.
Yeah. What is it?
I want to be surrounded at the banquet table of life. And it ain't a table like from Game of Thrones. We just rewatched that. It's where the king sits at the top. No, I'm talking about a big round table because we're all equal and we're all going around the circle. And I'm there with the people I love and that love me. And I'm an old guy with a beard and the love is there. The fun is there. But so is the fact that I'm a trusted advisor, meaning I'm not telling people what to do, but if they have questions, I'll think, well, here's how I would have thought about it. Here's the mistakes I probably would have made in your situation. Here's the scars I have from the mistakes I have made in life. you take what you want with this information and make whatever decision you want, and I'll support you in it. That's, to me, the best trusted advisor that exists. A strategist should lay out options. Here's how I think about it. That to me, is it's such a great role. That's what I envision. Being at the banquet table, having fun, you know, passing around food with the people I love. They want to be around me still. My kids want to be around me still. Not for me to run their life, but to say, hey, Dad's fucked up so much and made so many mistakes. Maybe we can learn from some of this stuff.
Well, that's so awesome. It ties back to some of the roles that you've played and still play, right? You are an advisor. That's what you do for work. You were a professor. You were a teacher, right? It's almost like the wise elder. Role that you just
that
described.
Definitely enjoy, yeah, yeah. I, like a romanticized, but around a food table, like with friends and family, not just advising like
of course
regular folks.
Of course, no. And I think that's true. Like I can think of, you know, your life is like a movie,
right? Right, you own your story,
and then so you think about the characters who are in your movie, and the way that I describe things about the relationships that I wanted leaves out a bunch of people who have played key roles in my life. Yours, I think, encapsulates a lot more of that.
Sure.
Because that's another thing we didn't talk about, which is like these key transitory roles that people play in life, which I think is amazing. You have these people who pop in and out of life but make huge differences. They can be coaches. They can be teachers. They can be those types of people that really impact you in a way that changes the trajectory
of your
life.
Especially as kids.
Yes.
You can establish some really positive relationships with authority figure adults who aren't your close family or friends, and those are lasting.
That's
positive or negative.
You know, that's an idea that we didn't talk about, which I actually have a question on, which is why is it that the same wisdom and experience could be conveyed to you from a parent figure or someone like that, and you won't get the insight from it. You won't give it the weight.
Because we take it for granted, because we're always around it. We take it for granted, period. Any human takes anything that they're around all the time for granted. If they don't do things... If they don't create behavioral mechanisms, cognitive and emotional mechanisms, tools to try to remember this is important. I can't take this for granted. So like religions try to do that. Jeff Bezos did that with Amazon. Like every day is day one because he knew how important day one was. But people, that's really tough to do in your personal life is to try to remember, don't take my kids for granted. Don't take my mom and dad for granted. We don't give ourselves the organizational professional tools to do that because we just want to live our life.
Yeah. No,
That's my thought.
I love that. And I guess my question was more about the, like, it's interesting that you have to do that, where a person can come into your life and they play a certain role and they will give you an insight that will impact you on a level that changes the way you think about things and the way you behave. And you could go home and your dad would be like, yeah, I told you that 1,000 times.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, whatever, Dad. I think that's crazy.
It's the difference between hearing and listening.
Yeah.
You heard it from your dad or your mom, but you didn't listen. You didn't process it. And that's just life. And the parent, that's on the parent to respond positively and to build that in and just say, hey, we're going to keep building on these values, and you might not hear it till you're older from somebody else. And that's okay. Cause I just want you to hear the damn things,
yeah,
or listen to some point.
Yeah, no, I agree. I love that.
Cool. Well, what else you got? I'm pretty good. I'm happy to chat about whatever. Though.
Well, something huge that we haven't talked about, which is love.
Oh, I mean, we've talked about it, just not head on.
And my thought on this was because we're talking about, family and friends, and what is family love versus friend love versus romantic love?
Well, I mean, the romantic love one's pretty easy.
Well, is it? I mean, because
procreation and pleasure.
Well, we think those are the first things that come to mind, but then at some point that romantic love evolves into family love.
But it doesn't have to with modern medicine anymore. People choose not to have kids, Dave. I know multiple couples that have said, we don't want children. So they've chose their romantic love to take procreation, the biological response, out using science, and they focus on pleasure.
Sure, but let me push back against that. Because then at the end of life, one of them's dying, the other one does do the family thing. They change their diapers.
Sure. Okay. Fair enough.
So kids or not, I think romantic love that lasts ends up evolving into family.
Okay,
love.
Good. I was thinking about it differently. Yes, I agree with you.
And so it's all love, is it not?
Well, yeah, but again, there's different types and styles of love. How you show love to Lauren and your kids looks different than how I do to Kizzy and my kids. At the base core, it's all about what's the intentionality behind it. With me being a little sterner, stricter, or whatever with my kids or with Kizzy, am I doing it out of love? Yeah, I am doing it out of love, but I express that stylistically different than you might or somebody else might. And I'm comfortable with that because I know who I am.
Well, and maybe where I'm getting with this is, where does it evolve from like to love? So what? We all agree that
how long is a piece of string?
I know, and we all agree that the family part, right? Like, I think we would all call that love.
If it's a positive situation.
If it's a positive situation.
I'm putting a cigarette out on you because I love you.
Well, that's not.
Well, I know, but
nobody's going to call that love.
They do. People are nuts. Okay, but that's not love.
I'm talking about what the average person would interpret as love.
Okay, fair enough.
So, caring for someone end of life, I think we would all agree that is an act of love, right? And there are many other acts of love that are before that, right? So, it could be even good situations. And so, we'll agree. Like, okay, so that's easy. That's an easy call. Friend love, right? There's a point in time where you realize you love a friend, like, and that's a different thing. There's no romantic element to it either, but it's like you said, right? Where here's my bar for that. You said I like being the person that people depend on in those whenever they have a flat tire, whenever I like them knowing that they can depend on me. For me, like, love is almost like, when would I feel bad if they didn't depend on me in that situation and they didn't care? You get what I'm saying?
Right.
So, like, someone goes and moves and they didn't reach out to me. And it's like, oh, I wish they would have.
That to me is an opportunity for their relationship is not valued the same way from your eyes to theirs.
Right.
That's what that is.
Right. No, and that makes sense. And so I'd say, I don't know. I mean, obviously there's a million ways to measure
it. But that's the other thing is you can't be in that relationship and assume that you're both weighing or thinking about or valuing the relationship the same way.
Yeah.
A relationship is useful for people if it brings positive emotional energy or solves problems for both people. So for me, there is no line in the sand between like to love. If I had to give a guideline that somebody could think about, it's I like being around this person. They like being around me. That gives me positive emotional energy. That's selfish. Love then would be not just I get positive emotional energy from being around it, but I'm able to communicate and connect it with this person in a way that could hurt the relationship. But because there's love, they know I'm not doing it to hurt them because the intentionality is there to build the relationship further. With truth, and truth hurts. On the like side, we hide truths. We don't hit the truth because truth is ugly and dirty. It's poetry. Everybody fucking hates poetry.
That's good. I like that.
So truth, the love involves truth. Like is maybe building to truth, but maybe you stop before you share like the real thoughts.
Oh.
I don't know.
So could I summarize that by saying with love, there's an element of an unseverable connection?
Well, I
or is any connection severable?
Yeah, I was just going to say, in general, I like that. Yeah. But of course, that can be severed. Yeah. People can be betrayed and things can – and we don't forgive. Like, but overall, I like that. Mm. I'd do that and then say with an asterisk, like, clearly certain circumstances might occur where love can be severed type thing.
Cool. That's all I got.
Yeah. No, that's huge. Well, today was a fun one. I think we still performed. Even though we were excited, man. It was a good energy. We both want to be surrounded at the banquet table. Friends and family are a form of medicine. They're a form of nourishment. Humans have a level below. Forming the true base is not just food and shelter and water. It is social because we cannot exist as a species without another human being committed to our life at that early age. Family and friends go through cycles. There's different processes you can use to build friends, maintain friends, and keep them around. At the end of life, though, it seems like having family is important because they're oftentimes the ones that'll take care of you. If you want to think about how to build friendships, think about trust and trouble and the flat tire. Which line are you, which end of the phone call are you on? Are you the one always asking for help from others? Are you the one giving or both? So you need to have some balance there. Yeah, jump in.
Great summary. We didn't do change challenges.
Yes, we need to add change challenges.
So here's my change challenge, and it's because it hits on a bunch of things that I could talk about. We didn't get to on this episode. Pay attention to the way that you build your life. The major life decisions that you make, what to do with your work and your work time, because that's a majority of your life, and what do you base that decision on? Where do you live? In the country, or in the world? How did you decide that that was the place that you were going to live? And then how do you spend your time, the majority of your time? Pay attention to those three things. Analyze those three things. And then ask yourself, how much relationships weighed in on that decision? Did you live in a place because that was just seemed like a very cool place with lots of cool things to do? Did you choose your job, you know, because it paid well or you liked, you know, the subject matter of it? When you spend your time, do you do it because the subject matter is interesting to you? Do you do those things devoid of the relationships that can be happening in each
really
one
good
of those.
Stuff. But you're doing what you always do. Summarize it concisely. Give the 2-step action plan for the change challenges because it's really good. And so you gave them thorough shit. Give me the 2 or 3 steps. What do they need to do?
Revisit your big decisions when it comes to work, place of living, where you live, and the way that you spend the majority of your time. And analyze whether you're satisfied with the relationships that you have in each one of those things. Because if not, then maybe you chose poorly, or maybe you need to make a change.
Awesome. Very good. Mine is the flat tire. For those you're first of all, spend time thinking about who are your close group of core friends. If you I use a phrase a lot, which I didn't bring up today, of life advisors. I have a group of what I call life advisors that when I have a major decision, I'm going to gather data from them. And I won't make the decision necessarily that they would, but I want to hear how they think through things. Obviously, Dave's one of those people. But I have different ages of groups. So first of all, who are your core group? Your life advisors or those core friends, okay? And then do an honest analysis, the flat tire. Am I contributing equally or in a fairly balanced way to this? Am I always the one calling for help with the flat tire? Or am I the person going out to help with the flat tire? And if it's one way or the other unbalanced, a conversation probably needs to occur. Because eventually there's going to be resentment there. So it's another way to think about it. What are you contributing to those core relationships versus what are you taking from those core relationships? A business metaphor. How are you taxing those relationships versus are you paying a dividend to those relationships? So again, only those core ones, only those life advisors, but think about it. And if you're not doing what you want to do, then fucking do it. Just start doing it. Give yourself reminders to do it. It ain't hard. You just got to take action.
I love that. And I am going to write down my life advisors because that's not something I've formalized. I find myself.
Really?
Well, no, I'll reach out to the people that I want their opinion
to. I have a list.
But I have not formalized that and thought through it. That is awesome. Okay.
And you got to train them. Hey, well, me and you don't. But like when I reach out to people, I always just say, hey, I'm in data gathering phase. Walk me through your thoughts on this versus tell me what to do. That's different. And it hurts people's feelings if they think you're coming to them to get the action you will take and you don't take it, then they could be offended and not want to give it in the future. So you got to train people. And we know this from business, professional service providers. Hey, I just need some information. Walk me through your thought process. Give me a couple options. I'll make the decision on my own. Cool. Here's what I think.
That's great.
Anyway, so today was fun. Friends and family, great medicine, great nourishment. Build some relationships, nourish the ones you have. And as we say at Life Lab,
experiment with life.